Czechcast, a podcast in English about Czech and Moravian society, history, culture and economy.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Czechcast, the podcast where we explore all things Czech, music, history, culture and the stories that bring them to life. I'm Vít Pohanka, your host, and today I'm really excited because I had the great pleasure of speaking with one of the most distinguished international conductors of our time. Jakub Hruša is Czech, and starting in September, Jakub will take on a prestigious new role as the music director of the Royal Opera House in Covent Garden, London, a milestone that places him among the world's most influential conductors. As Jakub explains, his decision to devote himself to music was not just a career choice, but a realization of what he truly couldn't live without.
I realized suddenly I didn't want to lose music as a main focus. I couldn't suddenly imagine that I would be doing some kind of a job as a main portion of my life, and only in the remaining time I would be able to occupy myself with music.
Although he has a broad appreciation for all genres, his heart remains with classical music.
I always return back to classics because I always thought it's just so much richer, so much deeper, so much more interesting.
And while many admire the artistry of soloists and orchestras, Jakub highlights the crucial yet often overlooked discipline behind musical mastery of each individual member of a music body.
You cannot avoid the hours of discipline. It's unpopular to say, especially these days where everything seems to be promoted in terms of like people should love what they do and all do it only when they like to do it, and children tend to be handled with a lot of freedom, which on one hand is extremely beautiful, but I think this perseverance and discipline in playing an instrument is absolutely unavoidable.
Our conversation was so engaging and Jakub was so generous with his time that we ended up talking for nearly 90 minutes. Because of that, I've decided to divide our discussion into two parts. In this first part, we explore Jakub's early passion for music, his artistic philosophy, and what drew him back to the classics time and time again. So, whether you're on a walk, enjoying a quiet moment, or simply curious about the mind of a world-class conductor, stay with me for this conversation with Jakub Hruša. You are listening to Czechcast, and I'm Vít Pohanka.
Czechcast, a podcast in English about all things Czech. Whether you're an English-speaking expat living in Czechia and Slovakia, or a descendant of the Czechs, Moravians and Slovaks who left for a better life in America, Australia, Britain or Canada so long ago that you don't speak the language of the old country, this podcast in English is for you.
My name is Jakub Hruša and I am a Czech conductor who's got a beautiful, fulfilling international career with amazing jobs about which I never really dreamt, because it's really so much beyond what I expected in my life. But really, the top work internationally, especially in London, Bamberg and Prague, these three cities being my home, basically, especially in terms of family, London and Prague. And I am a passionate music lover whose vocation is to share this passion with public and spark the enthusiasm which I feel for music generally in them, together with the orchestras and opera houses I'm leading. And I'm also someone who has been really privileged to succeed in what I would wish to everyone, which is to do as life's job, you know, vocation, exactly that which one loves most. So all positive things. And on top of that, I have a beautiful family. So I would describe myself also
as a family man.
So how many kids have you got?
I've got two kids, a daughter, 11 and a half, and a son who is almost 9.
And where do they feel at home? Because as we are speaking, as I understand, you are in Bamberg in Germany, but of course, I mean, you are now very closely connected to London and will be staying there for some time. But you mentioned Prague as well.
So the home of my children, or home of us as a family, is London and Prague. I would say these two places. Prague originally, because both my children were born there. My wife, as well as myself, of course, is Czech. So we are an entirely Czech family by origin, and we speak Czech to each other constantly and always, basically. For 8 years now, we've been living in London as a family, and that's the place where the kids go to school and where I have one of my main jobs, you know, in terms of the responsibility and importance, probably the main one. So we are there, and I'm there now much more than I used to be, which is a good part. It's a novelty for me, a very welcome novelty. But when we can, which is every now and then in the half terms and in the holiday and Christmas and Easter in the summer and so on, when we can, we go back to the Czech Republic. So our wider family is there, especially in Brno, where my wife and I come from. And so we try to stay in touch with all of them. And so the children actually have a very beautiful connection to the Czech Republic, I should say.
As you mentioned, you actually grew up in Brno. So are you one of those Brňáci who moved to Prague and never looked back?
One of those Brňáci náplavy, yes. That's exactly what I am. I basically was in Brno until my adulthood, until about 17, 18 years old. And as I started studying at the university type of school, in my case, Academy of Performing Arts in Prague, I moved to Prague, and I never really abandoned or left behind Brno. We have a very strong connection there, and it's a very beautiful, actually, also professionally, because I used to work very regularly with the Brno Philharmonic, and recently I was also with the Brno Opera. So there is a beautiful connection, and in a way, Brno Public is extremely special for me, because I think for everyone confronting yourself in adulthood and as a professional and as a publicly known figure with those people who knew you as a kid and who also helped you to become who you are, there's a very special responsibility and pleasure in performing in Brno and in Prague as well, because that's the next stage. Yeah, so Brno, then from 18 years old, Prague, and then to some extent from 2015, 2016, Bamberg, where I also have a flat where I stay, where I'm here, and last 8 years in London. So it's really kind of complicated, but I don't like really burning bridges behind me. So although it gets on my nerves very often, especially where do I keep my things, actually? Where do I have my, you know, clothes and my books and my scores and my favorite pieces of furniture, whatever, I cannot really decide. And so I'm trying to remain in a beautiful relationship to all of those places. And there's a toll for it. I sometimes feel like I am nowhere and everywhere. But actually, also, I like the feeling that I didn't need to do a cut and say, okay, bye Prague, or by Brno, or by Bamberg. So I am trying to be at home at all those beloved places.
If you were to tell us something about what inspired you, you know, to become a music director, I mean, conductor, was there a eureka moment, or was that a process? How did you get to it?
I think it's a combination of several of those aspects. So first of all, I should say to all public listening to us, my family is not professionally musical. It's sometimes fascinating for people to learn, because it's kind of typical for musicians to be recruited or, you know, originate from musical families. At the same time, and I find it as an advantage, actually, I come from a family which always considered art of various types important and precious and, you know, important individually, but also socially. And so art of all kinds was always present and revered in my family. And I showed, I think, a very naturally, at very early stages of my life as a kid, I showed inclination, especially to music. It was probably quite clear. And so my parents cultivated it in me. It's very simple. So they surrounded me with music and they insisted once I showed this talent that I should, you know, persevere and practice and do it and so on. It was not extremely strict, but it was also not benevolent. I think I got really quite a strong hand, especially from the side of my father, to do what he felt I had a talent for. And at the same time, I should be quite fair to say, I never thought back then it would be my profession. So my whole childhood, I was doing this music occupation of various kinds, various instruments, singing, a little composing, you know, playing, improvising, more serious, less serious, whole childhood as something which actually is a natural part of my life. But then I kind of protested to do more of it than necessary and navigated myself into what we call gymnasium, you know, a grammar school, a normal secondary school, where I was supposed to get ready for some kind of a job. I didn't know what, probably something with humanities, because I always was inclined more to, you know, languages and history and literature and so on, more than maths, chemistry, physics, etc. And in the middle of that period, like when I was really starting growing up, you know, teenage, I realized suddenly I didn't want to lose music as a main focus. I couldn't suddenly imagine that I would be doing some kind of a job as a main portion of my life, and only in the remaining time I would be able to occupy myself with music. It may be very sweet and very beautiful for majority of people because it's their hobby and therefore there's this love fulfilled and no one forces you, etc. But for me, it was different. I thought I need to have music as the central point of my life. And there, my passion for music really arose. And I think I was clever enough and self-sensitive enough, which I again would wish to everyone somehow to intuitively grasp, to feel conducting would be just the right thing for me because my nature seemed to be very close to this kind of vocation. And I always loved especially orchestra sound, you know, big scores and, you know, the variety of what the orchestra does. And I was always... even if some people laugh at it, but I was always inclined towards classical music. I had periods in which I listened to a lot of rock music and pop and jazz and folk or whatever else. But I always returned back to classics because I always thought it's just so much richer, so much deeper, so much more interesting and so much more timeless also because I'm kind of opposed to fashions. I don't like anything which is fashionable is something I usually try to avoid. So I usually discover everything like one, you know, one wave of fashion later than everyone else because I have this animosity to the streams and waves of especially mass appreciation. I always like to have a little distance and go deeper to what I consider is surely worth it, you know. So once I was 17 and 18 and I got to the Academy of Performing Arts right after gymnasium, I started this journey and I've been on it since in an uninterrupted way and in a very fulfilling way because it just got better and better in all aspects. So I think... to cut it short, I've been very lucky and I am very happy about all of it.
Let me ask you as a layperson, does really
good musician with talent, no matter whether he's a performer or whether he's a conductor or something like that, really needy academy? What does the, or I suppose yes, but what does the academy give you extra that you couldn't get if you, I don't know, if you studied with someone, you know, just one person, perhaps?
Yeah, I think let's speak about conducting, because it's very different in different branches of musicianship. There are things which one can learn on one's own, and there are things which you cannot learn without rigid discipline at all. So if you want to be a concert violinist or concert pianist in a classical sense, there is absolutely no way possible that you manage as an autodidact, you know. It's impossible. Of course, you get somewhere, but you need a know-how of personal teaching, you know, of teachers who are personally connected to you. To answer your question, it doesn't necessarily need an institution. It needs the right people. With conducting, it's similar, but a little looser. So I think, first of all, you don't need to spend endless hours practicing, I believe, like instrumentalists need to do. So if you miss it in childhood, it's like ballet dancers or some sportsmen, you know, if you miss it in childhood and if you don't invest with tremendous discipline, there are certain branches of music art, especially instrumentalists, well, instrumental art, which you cannot succeed at. It's just impossible. You cannot avoid the hours of discipline. It's unpopular to say, especially these days where everything seems to be promoted in terms of like people should love what they do and do it only when they like to do it. And children, you know, tend to be handled with a lot of freedom, which on one hand is extremely beautiful. But I think this perseverance and discipline in playing an instrument is absolutely unavoidable. With conducting is a little different, because conducting is much more about dealing on the best possible niveau, like level, with talented people who actually play, and you are navigating them. So it's a kind of a leadership position where you have to acknowledge the demands of the job, but you don't need to play every instrument. You don't need to, you know, somehow measure the time you study the score by hours or days and weeks and months. Everyone can get there differently. But there are certain aspects which you have to learn, how the whole, you know, the whole job actually works in the world. And the academy or an institution can really provide a very beautiful background to speed up your learning, you know, so that you get there somehow more easily. But I think one has to be very personal and searching for personal advice, whether he or she is at the academy or not. It's, after all, it's really about your active approach and meeting the right people at the right time. And for example, if the academy would have, or any other school for that matter, rather passive, uninteresting, or even badly teaching teachers or professors, it's actually better to avoid it, of course, because it can have a very negative impact. I think in our branch, it's possible to have a career even if you didn't study conducting officially. It is possible. After all amazing, many amazing musicians become conductors at one point, because they just get the wisdom and experience which is needed there. It's another aspect, because conductors get just better with age. It's just a matter of fact. You can show an amazing talent when you're a youngster, but actually the part of the inspiration which a conductor should radiate to the orchestra and or opera house and then to the public, it's actually, you need time to get it. So unlike ballet dancers about whom I spoke, who at one point cannot simply continue because they get bit to be too old, and they can teach and be choreographers, etc. Conductors really, unless they have a health problem, they can really thrive for a long time. And if they don't do something wrong, like if there's not some messed up personality and egoistic problems or lack of social intelligence, whatever you call it, conductors actually can get better really for the whole life. And I have now here, I just can show you, of course, this is radio. I just got this DVD with Herbert Blomstedt, a Swedish conductor who is 98 years old. And he is as valid and as busy and as beautiful as any younger colleague, and actually more, because people just want to play the absolute best for him out of this authority, this natural authority he radiates, and this wisdom which everyone feels. But not every old man is like that, but the option is there. The violinists and pianists, and especially the singers, have it much, much more difficult, of course.
You are listening to CzechCast. I'm Pete Pohanka, and my guest today is Jakub Hruša, a Czech conductor who will soon take over the music directorship of the Royal Opera House in Covent Garden, London.
Let me ask you, let me mention rather my own personal experience. Years ago, I had the really privilege to be in New York and meet Jiří Bělohlávek in the New York Metropolitan Opera, where he directed Janáček's Makrompulos affair. So there we were, two Czechs speaking in New York Metropolitan Opera. There was a Finnish singer. I can't remember her name now. I'm sorry. That's right. And the reason why I mentioned that, I just thought, you know, it's so international. Yet you mentioned Jiří Bělohlávek quite often in your interviews as a strong influence and as a strong person. And he's a Czech. Well, he would, you know, both Czechs, Jiří Bělohlávek and you. Why was he such an inspiring person for you? And is there perhaps an element of national understanding, if I may say, on this level?
I think so. I think the similar background, starting from your last mention.
It can help, yeah?
It can help to understand each other, but it's not self-saving, because there are so many other Czech conductors with whom I have nothing to, you know, share on a deeper level. And I have equally many amazing colleagues or inspirations internationally. But it helps, especially in terms of the relationship to what we naturally and deeply love, without being forced or without even being kind of curious about it or somehow special. There is an obvious connection to anyone who was growing up within the Czech culture to love the best result of it, and in music, the best composers and compositions, and to care and to be interested always in care of and be interested in the Czech musical institutions and musical culture and musical public, musical education, and so on. So there's this connection. Why he was important is that he was a fantastic conductor and also someone who had a very beautiful combination of, let me put it a little bit black and white, but it's actually valid, combination of mind or brain and heart, feeling. He was a very good technician, so actually an excellent teacher. Not everyone can formulate and show transparently what it means to learn the practical side of the job. But the main thing was his passion and love and enthusiasm and his generosity. So I think, after all, what made him an amazing mentor, if you want, is that he wanted to be one. He wanted to share his wisdom and time and experience and his humanity with people in whom he believed. He was not like that with everyone. He was quite critical about other conductors and about young adepts, and he would not spend time with just everyone coming to him. But when he recognized the real interest and hard work and talent, probably three things which need to be there, he was extremely generous and went beyond just the formal structures of the academic curriculum. And here we are back to your question. So he was essential for me while I was studying, as well as another teacher for slightly different reasons, but the core is the same. Radomil Eliška, it was even an older generation teacher. And again, he went out to me and was able and willing to share time and experience with me and support and criticize constructively, positively. So it's those people. It's those people. And I think in a way, I agree with the saying, which we sometimes hear, that you meet people, you know, of a kind you are yourself. So you are naturally drawn to people who basically are somehow needed by you in your development, at least if you are approaching the whole life positively. I would also recommend to anyone starting his career, studying, or just trying to find his or her way through life, it's very important also to avoid negative people. You know, I've tried always to follow, to not to spend too much time with people whose energy is really bad and who don't feel like helping you. It's not selfish, you know, it's not just about your profit, but it's about your soul's well-being. You just don't want to spend portions of life with someone who is telling you all the time that it's not good enough and that you should do something else, and unless it's true, and then that's very difficult to recognize. All those subtleties. But anyway, I think that's why I say, without meaning it as a phrase, I've been very lucky that I met those amazing people in my life, and Jiří was one of the absolutely most important ones. And if you look behind me there on a wall, there he is, next to Rafael Kubelík, who is also a huge example for my life, and next to Kubelík there is my family posing in Rudolfinum for a professional photograph. Yes.
You know, what you were just saying, it reminded me of a British lecturer that we had back in the 1980s when I was a student in Olomouc, of all places, in Moravia. And he told me that some of the Czech teachers at the exams, they have a tendency to find what you do not know. And, you know, to tell you, you don't know this, you don't know this, you don't know this. But there are other teachers, and they unfortunately were not so prevalent, I would say, in my experience, who try to find out what you really know during the exam and then try to build on that. If I understand correctly, Jiří Bělohlávek was one of those people who helped you to build on your talent and on your capabilities.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And after all, he was not interested in any exams whatsoever. I mean, he taught anyway in a very different way than teachers usually teach. And I think he had a very special position also at the academy back then. He officially was teaching there, but he was not willing to become a part of bureaucratic structure somehow. And on the contrary, fortunately, his personality was so strong that everyone allowed him to be different. You know, I think at the zeitgeist, you know, the flair of the time back then was different from today. 20 years ago, today maybe he would have had a harder job to do. But anyway, you're right, and I don't mind. I wouldn't be as benevolent or as new age free, whatever, to say that one should only praise and one should only say positive things. I see
dead ends in that area as well. But I think once, and I know it actually daily from my work with the orchestra, in fact, the job of conductor is actually always to recognize immediately where are the potentially weak points, or lacks of strengths in what the orchestra is doing. And of course, your job is to improve it, and everyone kind of expects it. But it's one way to look at it, like, oh, I am so great in finding out all those problems. And another way is to check them, to know about them, and address them through a positive approach. Sometimes it's helpful, and that's what Jiří sometimes did, to be absolutely clear about naming the problems. And I find it very liberating, actually also in a private life, when there is a clear idea that there's a problem and you stand for it, that you recognize it, then it's very good just to say it. And this is the problem. And at the same time, but because that enables you just to get rid of that, because it's named, and you can work on the journey, which is positive, and address how to improve those. So at least in terms of teaching. So I think the main thing is that a student or any young person or any child, for that matter, feels that generally he or she is just amazing and has a fantastic potential and shows fantastic results already. And those aspects of critique, if you want, are just particular aspects of training things which need to be improved on generally positive way to a better future. So Jiří was very supportive, but I saw him also cynical and very ironic. So if he met someone who was just a nonsense for him, not because because of the personal features as such, but because of the attitude. Like if someone just seeked out endless discussions and arguments, or was lazy and was trying to cover it with a lot of philosophy and so on, he could be extremely brutally honest and say some very cynical comments. But it was his way of protecting his own, precious time and personality. Everyone has to decide where to put the energy. And it's kind of a life issue for all of us, because we don't have it endless and limitless. And one has to put it into the things which make sense.
Thank you for putting it into context. I think that positive criticism is, of course, necessary. But if we turn page a little bit, when I was preparing for this interview, I understand that you spent some time in with the Bohuslav Martinů Philharmonic Orchestra in Zlín. And I don't mean this in any kind of, how shall I put it, conceited way, to say, Zlín is not, it's a provincial town, it's a smaller town. Now we are speaking, you are in Bamberg, you're in London, you went to Prague. What did it give you, this experience from, let's say, the provinces? But again, I'm saying that in the, good sense of the word.
Two things. I was 23 when I got the job of the music director there. So it provided me with a security, a confirmation that the path I had chosen was the right one. And I could really start working on my own responsibility in all complexity. So suddenly I could embrace what it means to be a conductor with everything which belongs to it. And people back then, including the older generations, although they occasionally were very critical about my lack of, wisdom, whatever, because I tended to choose a very shortcut solutions and maybe didn't have patience enough with what it means to be aging in orchestra, and you can imagine what it feels for, say, a 60-year-old a musician to have suddenly a boss who is 23. I mean, it's not is not easy. It cannot be easy. But even those people, I think, recognized my abilities and my preparation and my professionalism. And so it was this aspect. I could build my own life without anyone saying to me, you should not do this and that. Conductors, apparently, we are lucky, I would say, that we don't have bosses. You know, no one tells us really what we should do. At least predominantly, I mean, there are aspects where we cannot choose freely, but basically we have to be responsible to ourselves in terms of our choices. So I could train myself about it very early. And at the same time, the orchestra back then was going through a generational change. So there were a lot of young musicians and very passionate musicians. I'm sure it's the same thing today, but I describe what I felt back then, and I almost felt a section or part of the orchestra, some third of it, was almost like a student orchestra. They were these ambitious musicians whose absolute goal was to get as best as possible. So they really appreciated the hard work. But it would all have been not as meaningful for me. I think the main thing which I gained from there is the personal, the human aspect. I realized actually that it's possible to connect the utmost professionalism, ambition, and artistic, you know, career, however you call it, with a very personal approach, very warm relationships with people, and with a relaxed atmosphere. Actually, I think Zlín really relaxed me as a person. Also, I think with their Moravian traditional, kind of little bit out of the way approach, where you feel everything has a little more time and everything is a little more rooted, and people are a little more original and also friendly if they want. So suddenly, I think out of being a little too tight and academically oriented, these couple of years, 4 or 5 years in Zlín, really helped me to get to be a real mensch, real person, you know, and embrace that kind of the job, that one is not, a ruler, a monarch, or a dictator, but someone who is there for people to feel well in all ways. In the way of improving the quality, but also in the way of having a good feeling about it. So, and I built relationships there, friendships. I really couldn't have wished for a better start on my career. And simultaneously, it was so lovely. In fact, I was an assistant conductor in Paris at the same time, so I was always flying. There was this Smart Wings or whatever flight it was in the very early morning, 6 o'clock from Prague to Paris. How many times I went by car after a Zlín concert straight to Prague and fly at 6 o'clock to Paris, and there sitting in the rehearsal. And what? Of course, observing the big world, you know, this Western metropolis with the best conductors, best soloists and best orchestras and opera houses. And being shocked and impressed by that and inspired by that, but simultaneously thinking with love, in fact, about my orchestra in Zlín, where I can actually, in portions, make also this dream happen, you know? Like, of course, Zlín cannot be Paris, but in fact, back then, for me, it was actually more important, because there I could be my own master, and I could create something I could be proud of. And just to summarize, at the end, I think almost objectively, although of course you cannot measure it, but there was a very natural gossip or very natural talk about Zlín being absolutely the best out of the regional orchestras back then, and people started to connect this recognition with my person. So I also got extremely good reputation about this, about this improvement of the quality of the local orchestra. And of course, it was not in my tenure, but it was during my time that the serious discussions about the new concert hall in Zlín started happening. And so it was nice to witness and to have it and so on. So Zlín was extremely important. And actually, I regret that my career, which is otherwise so amazing and beautiful, doesn't really allow me to go back and see those people regularly enough, because I've always loved them.
So that's all for today with Jakub Hruša. In the next part of our discussion, we dive into fascinating question. Does the old saying, co Čech to muzikant, every Czech is a musician, still hold true today? Jakub shares his perspective on its historical roots and how it might have evolved over time.
I think co Čech to muzikant was valid in the 18th century because the recruitment of musicians in Europe was somehow surprisingly almost dominated by Czech instrumentalists. But it's also maybe, and that's the other side of the same coin, because they didn't find enough opportunities to work back home, and so they flooded the surrounding countries, and there was an aspect of it as well.
So be sure to tune in for part two of this conversation. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please don't forget to subscribe to Czechast so you don't miss what's coming next. And if you send a link to your friend, it's even better. I'm Vít Pohanka, and this has been Czechast. Thanks for listening, stay curious, a naslyšenou.
Czechast, a podcast in English about all things Czech. Whether you're an English-speaking expat living in Czechia and Slovakia, or a descendant of the Czechs, Moravians and Slovaks who left for a better life in America, Australia, Britain or Canada so long ago that you don't speak the language of the old country, this podcast in English is for you.